I like to first thank David for many things. David has, I think, put in a lot of effort to organize this workshop, and I think we are now at a really at a juncture that that we need many in-depth, thorough discussions. And David also has very kindly allowed me to change my schedule a bit to speak today. I told him that I would be sending all my papers to the web before I give the talk, and then Moses is laughing
because I heard that last year.
Yeah, it's really it's true. I'm not going to. I have offered an excuse in ULT, and I'm not going to offer any excuse. I gave the first one third of this talk at Penn State, didn't finish. I don't think at that time it was too well presented, and I gave another talk in ULT, and the time was equally short. So my goal this time is to try to my best to make it as clearly as possible. There are a lot of discussions on the origin of supersolidity, and I think probably there will be a lot of discussion in the rest of the workshop. I, however, would like to address one point, which is that I think one of the great things that we learned in yesterday is that, well, last couple of, is that first of all, this phenomena, I think now is confirmed, and whether it has to do with supersolidity, we can talk about it, and we also have the understanding now, especially last couple of days, there's a lot of the impurity play a very important role. So I think and the largest amount of data so far, and in a systematic way, is produced by the Penn State group, and Moses have a lot of data on the temperature dependence, pressure dependence, and velocity dependence. And the I think whatever theory or whatever picture when proposed has to address those questions head on, especially all those sorts of impurity dependence. And it is my goal today to address these issues that temperature dependence is that Moses see something like this. You all now by now it's very well known. Flat, small, in a log T scale, even the linear scale is really slow. Log T scale, but then on the log T scale, there's something happen, and then it goes down very gradually. So gradually, that it's hard to determine what TC is. The helium P3 impurity effect is most puzzling. You add a little bit helium 3, then the in the PPB range, it's only PPM range. I mean, it's only yesterday I learned about the new phenomenon in the PPB range, which we can address later. Now, the impurities, if you add a little bit of impurity, then the rho S goes down, and surprisingly, this goes down, but then surprisingly, the whole thing extends longer. Now, the reason it's puzzling is that usually one expects the rho S and the TC both reflect orders, and they should behave the same way, but they behave differently. And that is the puzzle. And in fact, I think at the beginning, about a year ago, some of my colleagues here, I'm not going to name names, but so baffled by this phenomena that they believe that this cannot be true. I mean, just something is wrong. But on the other hand, this is what the data says. The question is why that is the case. The other phenomena is that this we learned yesterday, which is now the other phenomenon which Moses reported many times in various conferences is that the velocity also, now that you look at the velocity at any given temperature, correct me if I'm wrong, I mean I don't have the data with it, that the velocity also drops. And the way the place where it drops is at the critical velocity, the quote unquote critical velocity, where the superfluid density drops to zero, is more or less, if you look at that velocity and move around the perimeter, then it's about 1 unit of circulation.
No, it's not dropped to zero, but
it starts
dropping.
Starts dropping,
right.
Yeah, so there's about that unit of circulation, 1 or 2 or 3. Something's going to happen. And then there's a pressure dependence that the Moses sees something rise first and then comes down. And there is also the John Beamish experiment, which we will probably hear next week. Unfortunately, I'm not here, but I think John probably would discuss this. So the question is that is there ways to under this all this phenomena as a whole? And I would like to. I don't know whether I can get through them, but I like to make the case that the super solidity has a natural explanation for these phenomena. Let me just again dot. This is a famous Royce data of Moses. Something happened. I mean, all show very similar behavior. And this is a phase diagram. You know, this is the pressure dependent that I mentioned. But let me I would like to talk a bit about although I'm not going to, this talk is not really about the origin of super solidity, because I think we need time to sort out. I think David has made a very strong case with his expertise and all the past success and experience. He's making a strong, very strong case that it was perfect Swiss, perfect systems, and he does not see it so far. I'm just giving an example as one of the possibility, and so that we can have a basis for discussion. The actual super solidity may not come from here, but in any case, it should be very close to this. In order to have BC or have a phase coherence, one must have number fluctuations. And if one has a perfect lattice of one atom sitting for each site, then there's no chance for number fluctuations. So the instruction that were given to us by Penrose and Saga is very clear. In order to have BC, you must have something like this. You destroy a particle here and create a particle over the other place. So you must have a Psi Decker here, and then you have destroyed this guy, and then this two has to correlate with each other. A wave function of this form is a very natural way allow you to do that, because if you just use the lesson from BCS that if every site has some fluctuation, now of course this is not number, this doesn't depend on what this is not from number of conserving, but one can construct a number of conserving states later, but if every site has some fluctuations, then there's a chance of, if I take a particle out, then this site is left empty, but then I can correlate with the other configuration where this site is exactly empty. Now, if you take this state and then project out the state with that so that you have fixed number of particles, this state consists of many configurations like this. One configuration is everybody is filled, and this one's empty, there's a hole here. And then the other configuration is that there are zillions of configurations. The other one is one of the hole here. This is R1 and this is R2. So if you consider a correlation function, if I destroy part of R1 here, then I put it back at R2, then you can this is the configuration that allows you to have long range order. So every site, the fact that long range order is seen here, because every site is identical, they have exactly the same fluctuation. And the So something like this would have long-range order, but then in this wave function, one would definitely require some host moving around. Now the point, one thing I would like to point out is that suppose I work out the density of this system. I put a few holes in here. The density wouldn't change very much. If you just look at density, there's a few holes, you have a perfect solid, and then you put a few holes, it's hard to tell. So, now with this, the introduction. Now, for the rest of the discussions, I would assume that the system is a super solid, and then address the question whether it is possible to explain the current data. The current data, what suggests to at least to me is that there's something happening at this particular temperature. There's nothing that degrades the superflow until at this temperature, and this means that something is activating at this point. Be it defect or whatnot, whatever carrying objects, then we can. Different colleagues would have a different way of thinking about it. The way I would like to think about it is that in order to degrade the super fluidity, the super flow, then this object must be carrying flows. And there are only two objects that we know of that carry flows, is a vortex line, vortex rings. And so, but then if I given a vortex line, vortex rings, and there are ways to estimate the energy. And the way to estimate the energy is a very simple way, which is that you take you assume that something like this works, and then this you can write as this mass and density, just rho, this is rho s. But I combine this way because this is Moses measures and this and that, and then this is a constant. And then if the dimension of this object is, so you just integrate the volume, and if it's a line, then you have to look at the length of the line, and then this is the transverse direction. If you have a vortex ring, then you just again do this integral, and then calculate what this is. Now what we need to do is then to calculate, to equate, because this number is known, this is the dimension of the system. You just calculate this number. This is a dimensional system, this is R, and then compare with KBT. Now, if you compare well, of course this depends on the size of R, and this will tell you what size of vortex ring you need and what size of vortex line you need. If you do the comparison, you'll discover that the vortex line come out from this temperature, it's very short, it's just a few lattice spacing, and there's no such line that we know of, except at the boundary. At the boundary, they might as well consider is a ring that's trying to come out. So
you do the calculation. You actually do a microscopic calculation.
No. I'm going to show you. This is the number. The calculation is the following. This is a qualitative. I'm just trying to motivate why I want to do the thing that I want to do later. The way that thing about it is that here is rho s. This is just rho s. I mean, most is measured average of rho s. I mean, this sort of, this is average. Put it out there, and then this is the rho s of a rho. This is rho, and then the rest of them is just simple integration. And this would be size of R. And now here's a comparison. And this a number. Just believe me, I take it. I mean, I just copy what Moses in his science paper, and then at the end, the message of this is that the size of vortex ring will be a few lattice spacing, and then if you look at the size of vortex line, it will be more or less the same, but then there, like as I say, no such line. So this data speaks to me as that at that particular temperature, there are a lot of vortex rings of this size, nuclease, all at once. Now the question is that what are they going to do, and is there any way to understand their dynamics? Question?
When you calculate this line, I have a question about this arch one in the cover.
You see, You see, the log, it doesn't do you any good even if it's 23 order magnitude, give a factor of 23.
Yeah, but I found that fact is also quite important.
So I would at the moment, my conclusion would be that this logarithm. Well, I like.
Have you ever
written
with
the
calculus by spacing?
Yeah, 5 or 4 or 5 letter spacing. That would be the. Now, then the question, why, I mean, but we know, for example, in helium, in pure, in the homogeneous fluid, pure helium-4, if you have rain, the rain is very seldom stable, meaning classical fluid, then depending on whether you have flow or no flow, that the rings either contract or expand, and these are always, the point where it's stable is a maximum, it's not a minimum. So, but in this case, that now I think this is a very unique situation here. Here, in the case of super solid, is different. Suppose you manage to create a ring. If you create a ring now, if it's unstable, you're going to contract or expand. But when it contracts, expands, it must pass through the region, a region of high densities. Now, initially, the ring must nucleate near the region where the density is low, because then it does not cause as much energy. So if it passes through the area of high density, then by energy conservation, then it just cannot go through. And so therefore, the rings, soft super solid exists, the vortex rings in super solids would be metastable. It have to be metastable. If it's metastable, then there is a hierarchy of rings, and one particular size at the bottom that has lowest energy, and that energy, I would argue, is what the data suggests to us. So,
I think the energy of this excitation would be 0.1 Kelvin.
Whatever the temperature is.
Would these be excited by like a neutron? Would you see a neutron in the excitation?
I have not thought hard about it, but my expectation they would. I have not thought hard about it, so don't hold me back. But I would have thought. It then depends on how energetic the neutron is. I mean. I am not going to say anything about neutrons because I haven't thought about it. Yeah. So I now would like to, for the rest of the talk.
Sorry, this energy scale doesn't depend on anything, right? It's just a size.
Just the size, yeah.
Okay, but now we know that take a change TC.
I'm coming back. Let me address that question first. I will, in fact, the impurity effects, which is something new, I haven't told you, is one of the major parts of the talk, and how these things move around with impurity will become clear later. So I would answer your question. I may give you the wrong answer, but I'll answer your question in full.
My other question is the idea that the decrease in superfluid density has to be due to vortex line or vortex ring excitation. So if it's defect, if a super solid is caused by defect, why can't I just change the density of the defect?
Let's see. You mean why can't I change the density defect so that what?
So I would have less superfluid.
I am not saying this is the only way to do it, but let me just restate my logic. I have said that there may be many interpretations of this kink, but something is happening there. That it suggests vortex ring. Now I'm not excluding other possibilities. It could be other things. Then it would be fine. Just let's calculate, that's all.
Why wouldn't you see the specific heat?
Specific heat, what the...
I mean, if there's an excitation of 0.1 Kelvin, why wouldn't you see a bump?
I don't know the answer. I have not thought about the specific heat, but let that so the question was a little bit. Yeah.
Can you explain this figure to us?
What?
I want an easier question.
No.
Beautiful picture.
the, the contour is supposed to mean that the contour is supposed to mean the constant density. I will come back to either let's at the moment think of really a t equals zero. These are full densities. At t equals zero, if you take this was proposed by Tony, that if you take that picture, then at t equals zero, the microscopic superfluid density is the full density.
No, that's only for a homogeneous.
No, it's the wave function. What he did is just take the wave function of anything. And then say, suppose if we agree, now we may not agree, but if the low line excitation is only phase either I theta or something, then the energy change due to that is rho s. That is rho times that. That's what I meant. Right. That's what I. Questions? So this is meant to be the ring, and then if you create a ring and then try to contract it from here to there, and then from the square one to the big one, then one has to go through some regions of density, high density in between. That's what I meant. It's very schematic. It's not meant. My talk are based on the following very simple model, and so whatever complication that I talk about originated from here. I would basically propose that let's study the model, which is the simplest generalization of the, let's say, the CDXY or 2DXY model, which is just 1/2 rho s vs, except that this quantity now becomes bumpy. The super solidity comes from the fact that I can talk about vs. That is the fact that I can talk about vs at all is assumed that is super solidity. But this object itself, as I say, at t equals zero, if you take the Tony's picture, that it assumes the lowest excitation is the phase excitation, then this is the full density. And as I mentioned before, if the superfluid density picture comes from something like this, if you sprinkle a few holes, even 0.1%, the density is not going to change very much. The full density is not going to change very much. So I am therefore, for the rest of the talk, I assume that this guy is going to be very close. Let's take it to be exactly the full density, and then ask the question: what would then be the supercurrent due to a Hamiltonian, a superfluid effective Hamiltonian of the following form? What is the full density? This is Vs. Period. And that's there may be all the other complications. So all the complicated, like this object itself would depend on temperature, and but we know the density profile of system. Probably not change very much in the function temperature. It may depend on whether you are in a container, if there's some background flow, or depends on impurity. So.
I'm sorry. I have problems. At the t equal to zero, the superfluid density is the same as the full density?
Position. I'm not. But you see, when you measure the flow, then you have I don't know whether you have read Tony's paper. The question is that once you push if you produce a phase twist, then in the homogeneous superfluid, then you sense the full density because everything is uniform. But then but if there's something that's lumpy, it doesn't even have to be periodic. Something lumpy, the system would find the best path. So the effective superfluid density would be way off, way down from the full density. Average density, and that is the what Tony's bound comes about. Yeah.
Here, rho of r is the lumpy.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, that's right. This is really atomic level. This is an atomic level thing. Yeah. And I'm saying that suppose I can talk about superfluid velocity vs. I just want to solve this model. Period. In principle, if I can do Monte Carlo, I have David's. I can just crank out and that's the answer. You can calculate specific, etc. The rest of the talk is that I try to make some sense of what this model is, and then That's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to make it, I just want to make sure everybody understand the proposal. The proposal is very simple. And Metonian, just one half OS, one half this, nothing more, nothing else besides this. I just want to calculate this. From here, I can extract whatever thing. And I would argue that, I will show you some of the things that one can conclude. Now, so the first thing I would like to talk about is the temperature dependence of the superfluid density, and the question to be disposed is like this: that I apply a phase trace on the boundary, and this guy now lumpy. So the superfluid find the best path to go around, and the usual way to look at the superfluid density is that I first calculate, let's say, if I have free energy, calculate energy the minimum of the energy, and then I have to calculate a thermal fluctuation. That is precisely what I'm going to do. But let's look at, suppose I do not worry about thermal fluctuation. Let's go to T equals zero and see what happens. This is the problem that Tony posed. That so you have a density that's non-uniform. So if I produce a phase trace on the average, there's a phase trace, that this is flow, I mean, there's an average flow. But then on the background, there must be a lot of black flows. I mean, why? Because I have to make sure that the divergence is zero, but the density cannot accumulate. So therefore, I must put in this here to guarantee the divergence equals zero, because this one cannot guarantee the divergence equals zero. And also from this equation, you will see that this whatever this is a proportional linearly to you. So whatever twist I have, the larger the twist, then the magnitude of black flow scale. At finite temperature, I will come back to this later when I talk about pressure dependent, but suppose now I would just imagine that suppose now I'm able to solve this problem completely. I know what it is. And then now the question is that at finite temperature, I know what the black flow is. From the black flow, I can calculate one half, which is kinetic energy. But now, at finite temperature, then apart from this flow, then I would have something that's fluctuating. This is meant to indicate some vortex line, vortex ring, and then this is the flow. I mean, it's a bad picture. This is supposed to be a dipole flow around the vortex ring. So in general, the situations about the
is this the same as Tony's equation and the same as Wayne's doing?
Yeah, very
simple.
Zero temperature. Zero temperature is the same thing.
The flow was is periodic, just like the underlying lattice. It doesn't fluctuate.
No. The flow is the equilibrium flow is periodic. The equilibrium flow is the uniform background, and the back flow is definitely periodic.
Right.
At thermal function, now I'm talking about that, but this at T equals zero. But at finite temperature, to calculate its superfluid density, I need to calculate the fluctuation of it. Right.
So it's in the fluctuations that you get vorticity because in
your background
zero.
You don't get vorticity. If it's equal to zero, you don't have no vorticity. You suddenly use in the fluctuation, you get vorticity. The red line is supposed to mean that one nuclear vortex ring. The green line is supposed to be. There's a core of the vortex ring, and then the green line is supposed to be the velocity field going out from the core. It's like electromagnetism. If I have a current loop, then the magnetic field is like this, and this is a current loop, but then here is the vorticity, and this is the velocity.
I mean, the green line is coming out of the screen.
That's right. It's a terrible drawing. U zero is equilibrium. T equals zero thing, your thing.
Okay.
At fine temperature.
Now V one, you're like Costello Salas kind of stop.
Yes, right, but it's not Costello Salas. Yes, yeah.
3D.
3D. Yeah, that's me. So and then there's a well-defined way to derive the so if you just calculate the first order, I mean, in phase twist, and then I remember that I say this equilibrium flow that says so much is proportional to the uniform flow. So this is proportional to average flow, Bouchard average flow, everything is U squared, and then so from here you can just so this is a complicated expression, but from here whole thing is something U squared. So this is the whole thing that is the superfluid density. Now what is this whole thing? This whole thing only depends on the density. It just only depends on this velocity fluctuations. And this formula you can find in the Lubensky Shaken's formula. So, books, and then I'm not going to go through with you. So basically, the key point is then to calculate the correlation function, velocity correlation function, due to whatever Hamiltonian. So far, I really haven't done very much. I'm just telling you the definition of how to calculate the superfluid density, and then in principle, again, we can run the Monte Carlo and do it. I am now going to make approximations, because then just in order to make some sense of what is going on, so I shall. But to make approximations, let me explain to you what are they. What my picture? My picture is based on supposed in Moses data really suggests that the elementary excitations are these vortex loops. Then I'm not going from now on. I forget about all the lines. There's no line in the problem because there's only loops. The vortex loops would do several things. It can nucleate. So here's the system. Here's the point I'm sitting at. I'm looking at the correlation of these two points. But if I'm sitting at one point and the field is fluctuating because I nucleate loops all here and there. Sometimes if I nucleate one loop, this one would generate field over here, and this guy would have its self energy. And this self energy is called HA, which is just the flow energy of this loop. Now, if I have, I also have energy interactions between different loops. Then I call it HC. So HC is I'll write down more explicitly later. And then now, but then every now and then, very importantly, is that some of the loops can touch each other. When they touch each other, it can become bigger. Now, but then there are also different ways they can touch each other. They can touch like this, or they can touch like that. I mean, so in general, the situation looks very complicated. But this is what this model would give you, that you have, if you have vortex ring, the vortex ring can have log decay like this, like that, in different orientations. Now we are going to make further simplifications, which is that I'm not going to do HCP lattice, I'm going to do a cubic lattice just for easier to visualize. And I believe the physics is the same, which is that now you can have, for each phase, you can have a loop, and this loop, for each loop, then you can, the loop can go this way or that way, i.e. parallel or counter-parallel to the coordinate axis. So tells you, so if you assign integer here, 0 means no loop, and then you say 1 means that it's parallel to axis, and -1 counter-parallel to axis, and so you can label each side whether they have loops or not, and the sense of the loop just by a number, take on 3 integers. And then this, if they're far away, don't touch each other, then they interact like a dipole field. I mean, this a dipole field at point, the dipole a loop-loop interaction is a simple exercise of electrodynamics. It's a wonderful R cube. The tricky thing, however, is when they touch each other. When they touch each other, then they would, certainly it would be energetically, favorable. They touch each other. They would tend to merge into a ring. However, this ring is certainly better than this ring. So here are the. You can take this model. This is a self energy or something. When you nucleate something, this is a cause. When you nucleate something, you pay the price. And here, forget about this at the moment, but here is some, there's a loop interaction that they're far away. Here is that when they interact, then depending on, you eliminate a bond, it's correct, then as a result, you generate some negative attraction. You just eliminate a bond, become a bigger one. But then it depends on, it's very importantly, depending on the orientation of the loops. Now, at this point, you may say, this is a bloody mess. This is a very complicated. I mean, there's no way. But why don't you just do Monte Carlo, please?
create. Do you want all three of these terms?
Well, we have all three of these terms because the well, I'm saying that if I look at this expression.
These are allowed by symmetry, or?
Oh, yeah, they're all allowed by. I mean, if I have rho s vs square, this is a fluctuating field. Now the fluctuating field is made up of this fluctuating field is made up of a field due to a lot of loops. Let's say R, but then you have, I mean, each loop is going to generate field, and then basically you just expand the location of the loops, and then you get a quadratic form.
So HC is the most general. That includes B and A, I guess.
Oh, sorry, excuse me. I didn't explain the location. This meaning they're touching each other. This bar means that they're not touching each other.
That's right.
Yeah. Now I want to at the end. I mean, I'm going to go through this a bit, but then I want to convey to you at the end what the key result is. The key result is the following. I have just told you the interaction between all these rings. Sometimes you nucleate them, you cause some energy, and then sometimes they interact very close together, cause some energy. And there's another kind of interaction where they don't touch. Now, when they don't touch, then there's, you remember that I have isolated vortex ring. Now, and we also know that if you have isolated vortex ring here and there, it doesn't affect the flow. The flow is not going to be affected to it. So what happens is that, and when you sum over all this configuration, you get something like this. This is at t equals 0, and then this is the study something of the order 1. And if there's no, if this interaction isolated vortex rings all you have, then this term is 0. What this term that tells you is the correlation of this vortex rings due to the fact that they can touch each other. The reason it's important is that see, when they touch each other, eventually they become bigger. And then eventually it becomes bigger and bigger, i.e. the condensation. John Goodkind, please. Where's John? It sounds about here. That if you have this disorder condensed at higher temperature, then you if I have lots of these things at higher temperature, then you can view it as a condensation or vorticity at high temperature. Then this guy would grow at temperature. And this what this is that the correlation between the vortex loop at one point, vortex loop at the other point, due to the self-interaction energy A and the fact that they correlate to each other when they touch each other. And so that is the result after you sum over all the say faraway vortex rings. So if you don't have interaction vortex ring that make them coalesce, you have only isolated vortex rings, then it doesn't do you any good, and the super density is remain constant. The reason it decreases because of these things. Touch each other, coalesce, expand, and destroy the vortex ring. That's how at the moment makes sense of this integral. Then the question is that what can one say about this correlation function? Now this correlation function, remember, this correlation function is the following. Let me just this, suppose I have a loop here, have a loop there, and I want this then to correlate. One way to correlate them is to a lot of loops at high temperature, then I join them together. Now this loop, however, is just this loop. However, this loop is not as good. You just saying we have a loop and pressing them together. It's not as good as this loop, a fat one. You can use lattice model to calculate the energy or whatnot. To calculate the energy, you discover if you're far away, a big loop is of lower energy. The best way to correlate them is to make something that's round and fat and then not have that much turning of corners. Now, but in any case, the energy of this loop is going to be given by the length of the line. And there's also an energy tells you whether you like them to be fat or you like them to be small. So you look at this guy, this guy has an energy. The energy tells you I do it on the lattice, that's why it looks like this. But basically, it just tells you that on a lattice, if I take one point, the other point, I have to go X, Y, and Z. These are lines, vortex lines. That's how I. But there's something that scale with the distance from here to there. And then now the question then is how many ways I can connect this guy to that guy. I'm going to give you some example, I'm not saying that this is it, but I'm just at least we have developed some intuition to what this does.
In the beginning, you made an argument that you wanted to have four vortex rings of like five lattice spacing. Then why are you reintroducing the longness over here?
Oh, I'm not introducing the longness. I'm then saying that you have small vortex rings that will leave nuclei at one temperature. Now, but suppose the temperature increases, I have more of them. They would bump into each other. But when they bump into each other, they would be bigger. Now, one could, of course, also introduce, I think even more proper is to, I bought just wings of bigger size at the outset. Then we introduce more fluctuations. Right? But this is the minimum fluctuation that you would have.
A solid version of Feynman's picture of vortex loop unbinding for Lang
what is the specific compared to just ordinary 3DXY model?
Well, in 3DXY model you have lines. I'd say I'm ruling out all the lines.
If you have 3DXY model, you can
reverse as proliferation vortex loops, like in Feynman's picture. And what is specific for super solid
is the fact that you have a fugacity, a discrete fugacity for the vortex for these elementary objects. I mean, there is something that is special here, which is this particular ring, this elementary ring.
So is it essentially XY 3DXY model?
Excuse me, please. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's 3DXY, and the result. Certainly most of the results do not show 3DXY, and I do not think this model. I mean, the question is that if I start with the 3DXY model, I begin to collect the density into a delta function focused on lattices. Whether the model would describe the same thing, and I do not think this describes the same thing.
So we have essentially kinetic energy. Yeah.
But with the density is lumpy.
Hmm?
With the density, that's
function. What if you discretize the system? You have gradient of beta squared. Okay. Why is that?
No. I think one test is the following. The one test, that the question is that whether you discretize it, even just go down to t equals zero, the question is to see whether you can recover, whatever approximation you can get, whether you can recover the effective superfluid density at t equals zero, and I claim you would not. Because you have to talk about the black flow.
Because in that case, the J in the XY model already included that as the average of rho SI in one unit cell.
If you want to, I guess my point here is that I do not claim I have a full theory, but then if you wipe it out at the outset and you say there's nothing special about vortex rings.
I'm trying to understand the difference between this and the 3DXY model. I think that's the important thing.
Yes. I think a lot less phase space than in these systems. Then in XY, then the ring can expand in an arbitrary fashion, and then you can have vortex lines and wicking around. You cannot do it like this here. You can just pop every time you pop one here and pop one there, and then if you're lucky, then you pop them together.
That's what we did, the Feynman-Kikuchi model, is the version. And that's in the same universality class, the continuous.
It's a small vertices, but once you start playing big one, for here, so
yeah, it's all the same.
It's continuous from there.
Maybe the same universality class.
Maybe just keep in the short landscape. The long landscape, maybe the same universality class.
Okay. Anyway, continue.
The G function is different for the legacy and for the real fluid, right? This function is on the normalized and the denominator is very.
I think so. You will see. So, Okay. If I, so there's an energy, there's a line energy connecting from one point to the other point, and so it would be this energy. And now, just to make some sense of what this means and what it does. Think about suppose I have a situation that only one configuration is most favorable. Because why? Because all other configurations I introduce them, I need to bend them, and there's an energy cost. Suppose the energy that price you pay the heavy price for the energy. Suppose that's the case, then if I fix two points, there's one configuration of lowest energy. In that case, I have one configuration. And this one is scaled as R, and this is just some angular thing. And then now you count the power R, the three power of them. And then this would lead to in something 1 plus T to the second power. Now if you have something like this, if this one is not that rigid, the price you do have to pay quite a heavy price, but not that heavy, but you only have one type of loop. And the loop, the only way you can go around is that travel around, say essentially one-dimensional manifold. Then in that case, this R and the 4 power, and this is R cube, T cube. If, however, you have a situation, then you have a ring like this, and then this guy can move around in a volume, and this size is of the order, or I'd say this ring is 2 pi R. This size, let's say, suppose 1/2 or 1/3, or some scale of R and R squared. So we have R cubed, something like this here, and this could be R six, and this would give you a T is the fifth power. Now, if you plot it on the logarithmic scale, and this is what it is, and there is a typically there's a place where it comes down, and it comes down to at about the energy of vortex. The vortex ring is actually energy in this formulation here. It's related to there by some factor 1 and 2, but the ring energy is in the middle. So far I have not included in impurity effect. I'm now going to talk about what happened if you have impurity.
Okay, so you don't have any exponential factor,
the one? What? I don't have any special factor. Look, I mean, let me show you. You have the exponential factor?
Yes.
You can all scale out.
You can't make it R equal zero, right?
Oh, this is for large. Shut up. You know, who cares about R equal zero?
I'm saying that it will be fine, it will be small, but exponential things stay there.
No. You can see the R equal zero distance, you can recover the exponential.
I cannot go to zero.
Look! I'm doing nothing more than doing this integral. With the continuum limit.
Don't you look at it as a foreside of some sort?
No. That's already in this energy. This is the model for the vortex. This is the model. I mean, already when I talk about vortex rings, I had to pay them a price when they come out. The core energy is already in there.
You have power laws multiplying exponential will be sitting on the lower cathode, but it will have.
Look, I'm. Yes, that's right. Look here. It's power law multiplied by PN, so I integrate all the power law, and then this is.
Yeah, this but don't allow R to be zero. So maybe Shash asks the lower cutoff.
Yeah. Look.
Is that independent of the lower cutoff?
You cannot do the integral by power count. There is a financial factor.
I give up. It's an integral they can do. look at the integral. It's a very well defined, it's a very well behaved integral.
It won't work at very low temperatures because of what
exactly.
You said.
My point is
it may be appropriate at higher temperatures.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, maybe it wouldn't affect the overall flow, but I think it will be.
Oh, at the very low temperature, I don't need to do this. I mean, I don't need to do any of this. If I'd be way below.
Before you rush to disagree with me, basically, you try to understand what I'm saying. You appeal to experimental data, and there is a power law in experimental data. But I was asking if the exponential factor will mess up your comparison with the data, because you have, at the lowest temperature, it will approach exponentially.
No. At low temperature, I won't experiment.
Okay, but it's...
Look at... Look, Sasha, at low temperature, you would have something like this. It goes to zero. This term goes to zero. And then there's, then you will come back. So that term goes to zero. Yeah.
Why should this count as the power?
For this exponent?
Yeah. Which factor is more important than t goes to zero?
This would be one minus... There are corrections that at lower temperatures. So I'd like to talk about some. Now, what does impurity do? Now, the impurity would specify a Ning scale. The Ning scale would be the following: that you have an impurity. And then I believe ppm means one part per million, something like that. And then that means that the Ning scale would be about 100. You go across 100 lattice spacing, and you see an impurity in the linear dimension. But the impurity has effect on the fluctuations. If you are on a scale shorter than the impurity, you are essentially in the bulk situation, because impurity, you don't see the impurity. I mean, but if you are in a scale much larger than impurity, then the impurity does show some effects. Now, what does it do? So we restrict the phase space of fluctuations. Here is an example. Suppose originally I have a volume fluctuation. If no impurity, it would be this one would go to infinity, and I integrate all the fluctuations. But now the impurity, I had to integrate up to the impurity size. The impurity is given by this number. And then, beyond that, I have less fluctuation because now the impurity becomes restricted. I go from volume fluctuation to one-dimensional fluctuation. Suppose I take this example, then this would already give you more fluctuation, i.e. that this factor is that more fluctuation, meaning that this one would extend further out. So this would produce a apparent TC, looks like a TC, but it is essentially extend out further. So that is how the
What are the impurities doing? They're pinning the vortices or what?
Yeah, I have assumed that the impurities are immobile. So with the suppose I have something that I can wriggle around, but then now once I see the impurity, I'm going to pin the belt. But the question, how many So in general, so one can switch from a behavior, one type behavior to another type behavior, but the point is that when the impurity, the fluctuation, the total sum is always increases in temperature. I haven't had a plot, so my roommate knows that I'm pretending until the very last minute, so I could have plotted this out, but then the as a function of impurity, but I'll do it another time. But I would like to mention about the velocity dependence. The Moses has seen the velocity dependence go like this. As you increase the velocity. Now, at this point, I have to appeal to you a fact. It takes some time to go through, but then if you accept this, then it will be easy to discuss. And then do something. I think you will not take you what if you go through the typical. Ask oneself what would happen to a Wannier state in a solid, right? I have a solid in Wannier state, but now I have to move the solid with the velocity u. So this u is mentioned in the background field moving by the containers. And then the question is, how would the Wannier state of the system change? And the Wannier state will undergo a phase change, something like this. And then now, so this would need to, where's my figure for? Jeez, I lost my discussion. Excuse me. I lost my discussion of so sorry. Well, I think I'll do it on blackboard. What one can show is that, well, the point is that if you have, well, the vortex nucleation energy should be proportional to the order parameter system. The order parameter system is the overlap of these YNA states. So therefore, the order parameter of the system should have a, if the, this nucleation energy is proportional to the order parameter system, and the order parameter is proportional to the YNA state, and then if I have two neighbors, so for example, in this boson Hubbard model language, you have R and R prime, they're neighboring states, and this will give you a factor of a cosine of mu dotted into R, or in this case, with the least by letter spacing H bar. So this would say that whenever you see an E naught in the formula, in the field, you replace by E naught by cosine of this guy. And you plot exactly the same thing out. I hope I have that. I was plotting it out at the last minute. So that is disappointing. If you plot it out, then you will see that the velocity profile. So now I'm just explaining. So if I have a formula like this, E is rho 0, rho at t equals 0, and then 1 plus t over t naught to whatever power, let's say to the 5, then what you do is that here, there are two places where the energy, the nucleation energy, vortex energy come in, is here or there. When you see, when you have the energy, you replace this by cosine theta. Theta is mu over h bar. And then here, you have the theta here, you have the cosine of mu h bar to the fifth power. And then you plot something as a function of V, as some function of U. The cosine up here, here's a fifth power up here. If this power is that 5, then it would show that if you don't have this, then you have a cosine. It comes down like this. Now this period is precisely the period of the order of the unit circulation. This is the MUH bar. There's a lattice constant, and then this would be the and instead of coming down like this, because of this fifth power, it would smooth out like so.
But would you actually have it go negative and then come back positive or not?
No. Sorry. This would be true when this went the sign is positive.
But I think
that's why it vanishes. But the point is that it doesn't drop down like a cosine like this, but then drops down like this.
But this only works for the uniform velocity of the container.
Yes. Let me explain something to you. Ask yourself the following question, if I may. Let me switch the gear, but this is a question very important to coatoms. Suppose I have an optical lattice. I put coatom on the optical lattice. You ask the question, what is the ground state of your system as a function of the velocity u? Turns out, by just moving a lattice, you can induce a much more transition. The system start out with it, suppose you start out near the superfluid phase, boundary, and then you move it just because the T we normalize down because of the cosine factor, we normalize it, drive you to superfluid phase, and this is something produced my student for the optical lattice, then you can start from by moving a lattice, you can drive the system from the superfluid phase down to the mod phase. Now let's see, I need some instructions because now I'm going, what time is it?
It's been an hour or so.
I think some of the things that but there's a pressure dependence that I think that the pressure dependence some of you have heard about. So
what's the conclusion then? Can we see that? How about the summary or conclusion?
The summary conclusion is that suppose you do, okay, Just summarize the pressure dependent. In order to study the pressure dependent, one has to solve this problem that Tony Naked posed. That how do you? I'm not going through algebra, but I will show you the problem. The problem is that how do you solve this black flow problem? And you insist that the phase twist is 2 pi, and I mean, what would be the best arrangement? And if you change the density, the average density, then you would change the black flow and you change the superfluid density, and that's how the pressure dependence come in, because this configuration has an average density. So the trick here is, turns out that Tony has not succeeded in solving it, but he used a variational method. Turns out there's a way to solve the problem, and then there's a trick. I'm not going to go through the trick for you how to solve the problem, but you can map this problem into a Schrodinger equation problem. There's an expression for the black flow analytic expression, which is very useful, because I can actually see how the form of black flow looks like at very high pressure. And at high pressure, that particular...
Is this any different than what Wayne does? The same.
I think it's very similar, except that I haven't...
He solves it numerically.
Right? Yeah, he solves it numerically. Okay. Now, but from here, I'm saying that from this result... Well, it is exactly the same. But then from the analytic solution, you can see how things, there are analytic results you can obtain to find out how things go as a function of pressure. Now one has to, but then we would have to depend on the density profile. Because remember, to solve this problem, I need to solve density profile. Now,
even if you solve this problem, you're only solving for an uncorrelated system.
Like, for
the flow, right? There's no correlation in this flow.
Oh yeah. You're absolutely right. I mean, remember that the point I'm making is that even there are defects or whatnot that need to super fluidity, is not going to change the full density very much. And the very fact that you can talk about VS is the fact that we are dealing with superfluid. As a result, I can do it as if they even use the wave function, which does not have super density uncorrelated to estimate the density, because the density is not going to change very much. So he would be the data, and that you can, so if you fix the density, and then use this particular uncorrelated wave function, and then you can calculate the superfluid density with that prescription, which one can observe. Okay, one can solve. At high temperature, one have an analytic expression for the superfluid density, and then with the density, this dot produced when it just depends on, I mean, I take this density, and then the expression only depends on the density, and then that's the result. And there's
your points to the black dot.
And then Moses, I believe this is the same as the Moses show us
more
data. So
what happened to low pressure?
No pressure. I mean, the approximation that no pressure, I need to solve that equation numerically. I don't have that muscle.
Do you have pen waving argument?
No, I don't.
Make it go down?
I do not at this point. At this point, I don't. At this point, I do not. So now, so I think there are many ways that but Moses also mentioned that at high temperature, at very high temperature, then this whole thing is T cubed. At the very end. So I think if you turn the table around, and then if this model has some validity, then it will tell you what the density of state, what kind of excitation that the system is exciting. It would seem to suggest that at high temperature that the system really prefer that. There's a things hop around on in a linear fashion. So I think the conclusion would be that. I think I go back to the original point, which is that there is a body of data that Moses has accumulated that it would be I think is so that's a question how to account for them, and thank you for your attention.
You are hearing predict the limit impurities of zero, you don't have any super solid?
No. The impurity it would go to it would depend on the density of state. If the density state is something like this, then if impurity go to zero, then we recover. Suppose just like this, take it pretty literally. And at low temperature, things can fluctuate somewhat. Sorry, without impurity, things can fluctuate some more. So this they suppose fifth power. So at with no impurity, then I recover fifth power. But then with impurity, then this one gradually take over, and then this. Because the Q dependent on this impurity as an essential singularity, so then this takes over and it becomes then this Q cube becomes important. Now, at low temperature, if this one has so depending on what the low temperature properties or density state, so
energy depends on the impurity.
Vortex, say again.
The energy scale you mentioned.
It does.
We started with the 40 MK. Are you sure
for
the lower impurity density, what is
data?
Your assumption consists with the
data? I have not calculated the T equals zero superfluid density with impurities in it, because I have not solved the similar type of negative. Go through that problem exercise to see how rapidly this T equals zero superfluid density decrease of impurity. I have no thing. I have nothing to say about that.
Can you give a summary of what you have accomplished? What is the open question? What are the numerical results and you hope for you were?
There's a prediction that, for example, there's a tail of the velocity profile. It should correlate with the, I haven't analyzed most of this data, but the tail, if the origin of the V, there's a rho S of V is the same as the origin of the rho S of T, and there's a correlation between the T dependence and the V dependence, and this gives you a very specific prediction of what that dependence is, especially because we have no choice. At higher T, it's T cubed, we know that power, and that power controls. If I know the power and I know at a certain temperature what the V dependence is, it may turn out to be not, it may not match experiment, but there's a very specific prediction, and the achievement, I don't know whether you consider achievement, but I think this is as far as I know, this would be the only thing I can see that can produce a, I don't know, just a, to me, explanation. To me, is a coherent explanation of a large number of data.